Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. And a live link at thetrumpet.com. Today is Tuesday. It's November the 8th. And here's what's coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Places you can find free food today. If you're in the U.S., might be helpful, or at least a deal on some food. We've got some information about that. Also, some information about the election, of course. We'll talk about that. And more information about Obamacare. What's going on with that? What's the truth about Obamacare? There's 8 points that are brought out that are pretty interesting, worth considering. We'll talk about that. Other things coming up this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm, have a live link at thetrumpet.com. You can listen to us on the TuneIn app if you'd like to, and follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. And also, any emails, comments, questions, concerns, diatribes, send those to comments at kpcgfm.fm, sorry. A lot of FMs. It's comments at kpcg.fm. That's the email address. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today on what is, of course, a big day here in the United States, which is Election Day. And I've got to hand it to you, Grant. You were correct. You thought that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were Trump supporters. They
yes.
didn't come out and say anything, but now they've come out and said, yes, in fact, we are... I believe the way it went down was Brady admitted it, and Belichick's like, yeah, I agree with Brady. So something like that. So they're finally out saying that they are Trump supporters. And I don't know that that makes any difference one way or the other, but you called it.
It's amazing because I haven't seen too much, but I've seen press conferences where the Boston media keeps trying to pin Tom Brady on who he's supporting, and he'll just end the press conference right away. Be very nice about it, but he'll just walk off every time.
Yeah.
And you can just tell they're just circling like vultures, ready to just swoop in on him as soon as he admits that he's a Trump supporter. So now you can expect a lot of attacks.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I appreciate that they don't talk about it. I wish more celebrities wouldn't talk about it. I don't care who you're supporting in a lot of ways. And they know full well that if... No matter what they say, they're really going to get, you know, kind of lambasted by the media. And so it's pretty interesting.
Well, basically, Donald Trump had a personal conversation with Tom Brady, and Brady basically said, you're a good friend of mine, I'm supporting you, and I already voted for you. And then I guess Donald Trump asked if he could tell the huge New Hampshire rally that he was having later that was the case. And then Bill Belichick actually wrote Donald Trump a letter saying that he was supporting Donald Trump.
Yeah, it is interesting how, particularly Hillary Clinton, she really went for the celebrity, you know, backing, and had Jay-Z at her concert, and or she was at the concert, or somehow that worked out. And I think LeBron James and J.R. Smith were supporting her. And I was like, well, if you want to talk to me about basketball strategy, great, love to hear it. If J.R. Smith wants to talk about how not to wear a shirt for months at a time, fair enough, he's an expert. But when it comes to politics, me thinketh not. I would rather not hear what they have to say about it.
Well, even when it comes to the celebrity endorsements on both sides, which endorsements would you rather have as a candidate? The most classy of all sports figures in Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, or I guess even besides... people thinking that they cheat, but
right. Besides all that cheating,
I don't know if that stuff is really substantiated. I think any team tries to get ahead, but those two guys, all they do is just keep their mouths shut and they win. And someone like Lady Gaga is the most disgusting person I've ever seen, and she's supporting Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you're going to try and judge only by celebrities, which you never should, that's not a good idea, you would give the edge to Trump on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that the celebrities pull a lot of weight. They think they do, but
to the young people they do.
To the young, yeah.
A lot of people who don't know anything about the issues would just support someone they think is cool.
We've got a little bit more about some of the celebrity input later because it's just interesting. Today, at Election Day, some places are giving away free food or they're giving certain deals, I guess. Patriotic Pastries and More, where to get Election Day food deals. Krispy Kreme, now you actually have to vote. You have to, or well, not necessarily. You just have to flash your I voted sticker at participating Krispy Kreme shops and get a free donut. It seems like they give away free donuts for about anything, but that's one option. 7-Eleven customers can get a free cup of coffee at participating shops at your own risk, I might add. The deal is available through the 7-Eleven mobile app, which is available in the App Store or Google Play. So if that's your brand, go
well,
ahead.
You can't resist the big gulp, though.
Yeah. White Castle, get a free gallon of iced tea with purchase of a Crave case. That sounds like an American thing. You need a gallon of iced tea to go with that Crave case? A gallon?
Can you believe the nearest White Castle is actually in Missouri?
Yeah.
I checked recently. It was somewhat disappointing because I wanted to try it, just see what it was like.
I remember driving by one time on some lonely highway and being like, hey, well, that's a White Castle. I've never eaten there. You must present a coupon in restaurants or use the promo code USA if ordering online. California Tortilla, not familiar with that place, but voters can get free chips and queso with any purchase when they say, make queso great again. I'm with queso, or I vote for queso while ordering. I agree with all three of those statements. The offer is available at the California Tortilla locations nationwide. So if you've got one near you and you like a queso, that's good. Bob Evans restaurant, you get 30% off your entire dine-in or carry-out order with a coupon that they have to print off. East Coast Wings and Grill, participating locations will be offering 5 free honey barbecue chicken wings with every entree order on Election Day. Great American Cookies, you usually see those in malls, I guess. Mm-hmm. You can get a free cookie at any participating Great American Cookies location. Don't forget to bring along your I voted sticker, so that's kind of the thing for some of these. And a few other places are doing things, including Chuck E. Cheese's. You don't have to vote to cash in on the big cheese here, an election freebie for the younger set. They will be giving away a free personal size pizza with any pizza purchase. And last, but certainly not least, World of Beer. I don't know what that is.
It sounds incredible.
But it does sound incredible. World of Beer, the craft beer franchise, is offering guests their first beer for just $1 at all taverns this Tuesday.
One beer is all I need anyway.
The only way, that's right. The only way to beat the only way to beat World of Beer is to set up a galaxy of beer across the road. Oh, World of Beer, huh?
Trumped.
You stop by the galaxy of beer. Quite an experience. They are, of course, a lot of celebrities have chirped in on what's going on with the election. We'll talk more about some of what they have had to say in the Of Course section coming up in a little bit. Just to get a laugh on a very stressful day. And we also have a really, I think, ridiculous write-up that we want to talk about from the Today in Bad High School Journalism segment.
Yes.
Also tying into the election, so we'll get to that in a moment. There is, of course, an issue in this country, I guess, with bullying. I suppose there's always bullying of some kind. Maybe it's just to make more of it today than they used to. But there's a write-up here from the Orlando Sentinel. They say that there's a new report out about bullying. And they say nationally about 1 in 5 high school students say they've been bullied at school during the past year, according to the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. You ever get bullied at school?
All the time.
All the time.
And I didn't consider myself even close to one of the weirdest kids there. But I still got bullied.
That's what you tell the people bullying you. Like, what are you guys doing? I'm not even
close.
Look
at this guy. Look at this guy. Yeah. What is going on here?
There's definitely somebody weirder than me.
I'm clearly not the prime target.
I was bullied at times. I at times bullied. I mean, it was a two-way street sometimes. I mean, sometimes you do that because, you know, if you're getting bullied, you figure, well, if I kind of bully first, then it, you know. It's not a good thing. I never liked being bullied. It was never a good feeling. Not productive at all. But it is sort of the reality. However, I mean, it kind of depends on what we're talking about here. Now, if it's kind of your basic schoolyard, you know, stuff that goes on between kids, I think that's kind of the way it goes, unfortunately. If we're talking more seriously, like violence or something, okay, you know, that's another issue. they don't really differentiate here. They just say the thing that they're highlighting is that their study says most kids are getting bullied, yet the school districts don't report hardly any bullying. So there's this huge disparity between the numbers. And they're concerned about that, but they think it's just because the kids – two things. First of all, kids are smart enough usually to not bully in front of the teachers. They're going to wait till the adults aren't there. And then number two, the kids just don't report it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see not reporting it. I mean, if it's just nonsense kind of, you do have to roll with it. Because sometimes if you go and you tell, you get bullied for telling. So it is just interesting. We're in this weird time, I think, when people are so hypersensitive. But then also on the other side, there's some really cruel behavior that should be stopped. And it's like there's two extremes here. And it seems like we've just drifted into those extreme areas.
Right. Yeah, I think I've only tried bullying twice at school. And one of them I feel like, well, actually, I feel like both of them were pretty well warranted, because one time I saw this kid spit in another kid's face and his lunch.
Whoa.
And I just open hand slapped him. Like, I didn't punch him, but I'm like standing there looking around. No one's going to do anything about this. And so that was my physical confrontation. And then another time in art class, this guy was doing like this teenage gossip girl type bullying where he wouldn't let me sit at the table in art class. So I had to sit at a table by myself simply because he said I couldn't sit at the table where everyone was in the class. And so I said, I just tried to provoke him one time, like, hey, we can handle it a different way if you want to, instead of like girls. And he wouldn't take it. And then he wouldn't take the bait. So he just kind of stopped bullying me after that, I guess.
Where is he today?
He's actually, I saw him in the paper. He's very successful.
Oh, is he?
He got away with all of his crimes.
There will be a day of reckoning.
But yeah, bullying does happen, because I think a lot of kids just don't want to experience it themselves. So if they're on the offensive, they don't really have to fend off as much.
I have two bullying stories. One particular bus I used to get on, there weren't a lot of kids on it, but they, for some reason, they had banded together against me. At least a few of them had. And so when I would get on the bus, they would all sit in all the seats all the way up to the front, so I couldn't, I'd have to sit like right up next to the bus driver, which nobody wants to do. And although sometimes they're delightful, but in any event, so that went on for a while, and kind of a middle school sort of thing. And so one day I thought, well, now if they're all moving up to the front, who's in their seats? And so when they all moved up, I just got on. I went all the way to the back and I sat in their seats. And but that probably wasn't the best thing, because then they all sat back there and harassed me for a while. So
oh, no.
You have those days. It comes and goes. Like I said, I've myself been guilty of it too.
What was the reason for it?
Oh, it's quite a tangled web when you get into the middle school politics.
Yeah, it really
and it
is.
Usually boils down to something huge like, I don't like you.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of actual reason for it. You get an instigator, and then they get people to go along with it. And in most cases, most kids wouldn't of themselves do it. But if you get the instigator and they kind of get everybody going, then that's the issue.
Yeah, usually if you can just sort of go along with whatever they're trying to do to you, they get bored of it because there's no reaction. When I was in fifth grade, I climbed on the bus, and this high schooler is like, hey there, fruitcake. But that's not all he said. He said some other choice words. But he said, is it okay if I just call you that nickname every time? I'm like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. I was only fifth grade. I thought it was kind of cool that a high schooler was giving me a nickname, even though it was pretty derogatory.
Yeah.
And he just kept calling me fruitcake, but it didn't really do much for him.
That should be your radio name.
It was like it was his duty, because he had committed to it already, or else he would have stopped.
Interesting. What
fruitcake.
Happens? Yeah. The other one I can recall is when we got into middle school, you know, it's kind of a different world. The world really changes for a while. It takes you a while to figure it out. And there was one kid who was really just a bully. He would just go around and, you know, do stuff just to everybody. And, you know, he'd walk by and knock your book off your desk, or he'd go by and, like, bump into you on purpose, things like that. He wasn't a really large kid, but at the same time, he was very aggressive. And it didn't seem like he had any particular targets. It seemed like he just went after everybody. So no one ever said anything that I know of, but he met his match a few months into the school year when he tried to bully a new kid that had just moved into town. And that kid was like, oh, huh, okay. And he said, well, why don't we fight? Like, he didn't back down. And so it was all set up after school because we'd all get on the buses, but we were going to fight out by the buses, right? So everyone knows, and this is going to be the big showdown, and the bully and the new kid. And the bully didn't realize that the new kid was actually trained in boxing.
Oh, no.
And I just remember watching it, and it was like the bully, he was just like a rag doll, like his head just going back and forth. And the teachers jumped in really quickly. I think he had a black eye or whatever. We never heard a peep out of that kid again. Unfortunately, the new kid ended up being an even worse bully. So, but that's kind of what happens a lot of times in life, is if somebody is going around causing trouble, they meet their match. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the way it usually works. And I think that's the way it kind of used to be settled. Like, well, they'll get their comeuppance,
yeah,
as they call it. But I do think, from my experience, that teachers could do a better job of paying attention. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you've got to know that this kid's really getting harassed. Just pay a little more attention to it. So I can agree with kind of both sides of this, thinking that, like, I think this article's pointing out, like, there's this big bullying problem and we need to intervene. I think sometimes they intervene too much, but on the other side, I think they let too much go. It just takes a lot of wisdom and judgment. It would be very hard to be a teacher or to be an administrator and know when to step in and when to let it run its course. So it is what it is, but you got to suck it up.
It does seem like a lot of the time teachers just stand by and watch it, and that's fine if you can tell the guys are a fairly even match and they're giving it back to each other, back and forth a little bit. But if it's clearly one person just domineering another person, that's when you need to step in. I mean, even in that art class, they went as far as to have like a survivor style vote to vote me off their island onto another table.
Wow.
Like, this is catty stuff we're talking about.
It's next level.
And it was right in front of the teacher, and nothing ever happened. I'm like,
wow.
Okay, I'll just go sit at this other table then. I don't want to fight the whole table. I'll just fight that other kid by himself.
That's where it gets weird to me. If a teacher sees it, I'm like, well, why wouldn't you stop that?
Yeah.
And just at least say, hey, knock it off, you know, and just try to move things on. But so anyway, it is kind of an issue out there in some of the schools. And, you know, but it can be bad. I mean, I do remember being in middle school, and when you come in, a lot of these kids are bigger because they're older. You know, I remember walking down the hallway and thinking, like, these guys look like full-grown men. Like, mm-hmm. they have beards and stuff in some cases. And so it can really rock your world because you don't want to get into trouble with those kids. But at the same time, it also kind of teaches you your place. Like, I'm not gonna say anything, or I'm not going to rock the boat here. And it does kind of teach you a little bit of humility, I guess.
A little bit of wisdom, picking what right. to say and when to say it, or what to do and when to do it. Because sometimes if you don't have that, you don't have really a grasp of real life.
Right.
If you do that in a certain situation where you're just insulated from any threat of being called a name, then you go out in the real world and someone's not going to appreciate the way you're behaving so much.
Right. And nobody likes to see their kid get bullied, but at the same time, if somebody is so isolated and so coddled that there's never any challenge that comes their way, that doesn't usually end up great either. Mm-hmm. So it is an interesting thing, and I think it's something parents always kind of struggle with when they have kids. And you always hope your kid's not that guy, I hope. Although I will say, the bullier, you know. I took my son to a basketball camp a couple years ago, and they put all the kids together in different teams, and he had a guy in his team that was just terrible in terms of, like, he wasn't even trying to play the game. The other guy would get the ball on the other team, he would just push him on the ground, you know, and
it's
just, like,
one or two guys like that around. Every basketball camp.
And he was always like, give me the ball, and people would give it to him, and then he would just, like, throw it from wherever he was, not even shoot it, and it obviously didn't go in. And I thought, what? Who's watching this kid? And then I saw who his dad was, and I'm like, oh, you're just like your dad. You're just younger. Because his dad was the same way. He was just, like, his demeanor and what he was saying, and like, get in there, give it to him, you know. And he's watching this kid just shove people on the ground, and he was happy with it. Like, he was fine with it. And I thought, wow. And he was a big guy, too, so I was like, well, you know, it is what it is. I wasn't going to say anything to him, but I thought, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it?
That's for sure. That's a lot of the time bullies come from those environments where they have a hard time at home, and then they take it out on other people.
That's right. They are bullied a lot of times, and then they bully somebody else. Why are we not school psychologists, Grant?
I know. It seems like the causes are so plain for a lot of these different problems. I mean, that was always the case when a kid picked on me. I had the perfect home life, the perfect life in general, and then this kid who whose parents had just divorced and right. all these other things was bullying me. And I mean, that's just kind of what causes a lot of that.
Yeah. It's it is interesting to see how those things happen, how they work out. But I'm glad to be out of school.
I know.
I'm glad not to be in middle school anymore.
A bunch of animals at times.
People, it is.
People just really don't have any sense of decorum.
No. And it's like that story, Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
I always thought, man, this is like Lord of the Flies. Especially like when you go to gym class, or you go to the locker room, and it's like there's no supervision here. It's like anything goes.
Yeah, you have no idea. In my baseball locker room, guys would actually toss the ball up and start hitting it in the locker room, and it would just go slamming off the lockers. And it got to the point where the rest of us had to lock ourselves in our lockers because there was nothing else we could do to to prevent that from happening. So thankfully, you could take your lock off, and it was kind of a big locker that you could sit in, but. Man, they were just trashing the whole locker room, smashing balls all over the
it
place.
It was so bad you guys locked yourselves in your lockers. You see the bully locked
exactly.
you in the lockers.
And it was all because a couple of guys who were just extremely dominant. They were the best players on the team.
Right.
But they also just happened to behave like complete apes.
Yeah.
And you're not going to fight them because they're bigger and stronger than everyone else, too.
Right.
And, I mean, you don't want to upset your best players either.
No.
It's tough.
It's always interesting when you get into some of those situations. But anyway, it's a bullying report. There's more on it at the Orlando Sentinel. But basically the gist is there's more bullying going on than it's being reported, and they're trying to solve it. Mm. Good luck.
Good paper, too. I like that paper.
Yeah.
Orlando Sentinel.
They have some good write-ups. You ever think to yourself, I wish I wasn't so fat?
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that caricature does me all kinds of favors.
our new logo, the drawing. Here's 7 types of unflattering clothes that can make you look 10 pounds heavier. A lot of cases, I suppose, this would be geared more towards women, but it probably works for everybody. Here's things you shouldn't wear if you don't want to look bigger than you actually are. Skinny jeans. You don't want to buy skinny jeans.
What if my pants turn into something like skinny jeans just because I'm wearing them?
Yeah. They didn't use it. Not when I bought them, they weren't skinny jeans. No, that's the style, right? And and so a lot of times if you go to the store, that's just kind of what they make now. And so you're looking at this stuff and you think, and this has gotten me a couple of times. I'm probably like a lot of men where if I buy something, I don't try it on. I'm like, yeah, that'll probably fit. Like, I think somehow just like holding it up and looking at it is some sort of measurement, though it's never accurate. And so I've done that, you know, all the time. And I bought a pair of pants, a couple months ago. And I came home and I put them on. I was like, what? These are not what I thought they were. Because they're, even though they weren't the extreme version of like what you'll see out there, they were still a lot skinnier. But I wasn't skinny-er. So, yeah. Whenever they hug your calves and then go up from there, it's not going to help your overall appearance.
Yeah, really. I mean, if it's already tight around the calves, it gets a lot worse the higher up you go.
Yeah. Just keep your eyes on the calves, folks. That's what to look at here. You also shouldn't wear too tight for comfort clothes. I mean, these are kind of obvious, but, you know, like you say, sometimes they weren't that way when you bought them. And then you put them on, you're like, wait a second, this isn't right, but I have nothing else today. That doesn't help, and I can relate to that. I think a lot of people can. A third thing they say you should avoid if you don't want to look heavier than you are is wearing clothes that are just too big. That's the other side of the coin, where it's like, well, I want something that's comfortable, but then it's like 8 sizes too big for you. Mm-hmm. Dress shirts are a nightmare for that for guys.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes those can just be extremely baggy, and I just try to tuck them in further, but really it's just difficult to deal with.
Yeah, it's like a one-size-fits-all. It's like a wind sail on a ship. You get a different angle of yourself in the mirror, and you're like, hey, look at this thing. It's this huge, huge garment.
You're billowing in the wind.
Yeah. It's supposed to get tailored fit, but that's not always easy to do. Speaking of seeing yourself and realizing you look different than you thought, this morning my wife made me some juice where she blended some actual vegetables and such. And fruit, and it was really good. It kind of threw my body off because it was like pure goodness. And my body's used to like being wrapped in like preservatives of some kind. So I was confused. And so, what is this? Can we use this for fuel? And but it had beet juice in it. So I brought it into the office and I drank it and everything. And I went downstairs past the kitchen area and I passed somebody, and they're like, "Oh, good morning." So, hey, how you doing? And then I went to the restroom, looked in the mirror, and you know, it like stained my lips, the beets like bright red, and then I had like the drink mustache.
Oh no!
I looked at myself. I'm like, I look like a clown. I look like I'm wearing lipstick. And I, you know, you pass the person, and they know it. They saw you, but they just kind of are like, "Yeah."
Oh, that's rough. It feels like people will not say anything unless they know you really well,
right?
And then they might.
Yeah.
And then they might not even then.
But that would be an awkward thing to say, like, your lips are really red.
To say, you look like a clown.
What's going on with the clown lips? That would be hard to not be somewhat offensive in that.
Mm.
Another thing they say you should avoid if you don't want to look 10 pounds heavier than you actually are is certain prints and patterns, I guess. I'm not sure on all the clothing science, but we'll take their word for it. Also, you got to be careful of the fabric. If it's the jersey fabric, as they call it, the stuff that really hugs to your body, that may not be the best decision. You might want to avoid that. The sixth thing is really chunky shoes, I guess, especially for ladies, that would be the case. Sometimes you see that. They're like these huge type of things. And then the last thing, which is pretty obvious, is really huge coats. If you wear a giant coat, yeah, you're going to look bigger than you are. So,
yeah, definitely.
Pretty obvious stuff, but I thought kind of an interesting list. Some people don't ever really think about that because it's not an issue. But as you get a little bit older, sometimes you start putting a little weight on, and then you start realizing, I look bigger than I am. And the other thing that makes you look 10 pounds bigger is 10 pounds of fat. That's also, they didn't put that on the list, but...
We're just dealing with the effect and not the cause,
right.
It seems like. And there is a fine line. You don't want to wear anything too skinny or too large because
right.
Obviously too skinny is going to reveal certain parts of you. But then if you wear something too baggy, then clearly you're trying to hide something. And that's
right.
The balance there.
It is a difficult balancing act. Getting back to some of the election topics today, I just thought this was an interesting piece. And it's the feature in our segment today on Today in Bad High School Journalism. this is something you would read in a high school paper by somebody that was like, they fancied themselves to be a creative writer, but just it didn't quite work out. This is the title. They really thought long and hard about this. How Rock and Roll Failed Us Again This Presidential Election. Right? That's been my big thought the whole time. Where's rock and roll in all of this? Foreign policy, what does rock and roll have to say? Who's going to fix the economy?
We built this country on rock and roll.
We did. Well, this city anyway. I'm going to make America great again. You know, on rock and roll, of course.
This platform.
Just a couple of choice segments from this long piece. It's that the author says, but every one of us at some point in our lives believe that music might move governments, not just our hips and our hearts. Well said.
I bet he sat back and was very proud of himself after that line.
High-fived himself. That music might anger world leaders, not just parents. That music might end wars, not just start conversations. I don't know. I don't know that I ever thought that, but I could see that. I mean, some people do get into music a fair bit. And then he has this, and I don't get it. President Nixon announced the withdrawal of all American troops from Vietnam on January 23rd, 1973, exactly 9 years and 10 days after Dylan released The Times They Are a-Changin'. What does that mean? I mean, everything's exactly a certain amount of years and days from something else. I mean, is there something significant about that?
I don't know. 910? I mean, is there something to those numbers at all?
I don't know. It's weird. Like, I could see if it said, you know, he did it the next day or the day of the song, you know, but this. So I don't understand the correlation there. I mean, you could look at any event in history and say that was 100 years, 6 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days since the. You know, it doesn't mean anything. I don't think it had anything to do. I don't think they ended the war because of the Times They Are a-Changin' by Bob Dylan. But maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't in the meeting. And then he says this in relation to this current election. He says, "Imagine this." What I feel like we need some background music. What if Bruce Springsteen had gotten into a van and trailed Donald Trump to every campaign stop over the last 4 weeks or even the last two? Imagine if every time Donald Trump set up to speak, Bruce got out of his van, strolled to a street corner or a park or just a few blocks away, strapped on an acoustic guitar and began to sing. Maybe he would sing songs about the working men and women. Or maybe he would sing songs of boardwalks or Vietnam. Or maybe he would sing the old songs of freedom and unity that Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger sang. Imagine that.
And that would have stopped Trump somehow? Is that what he's trying to say?
I guess he's thinking that somehow people would just flock over to Bruce Springsteen and change their opinions and vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, because he's clearly anti-Trump here. But it's just one of those things where you're like, you're taking yourself way too seriously here. All these celebrities and musicians do. I mean, they definitely have an impact in some way. But why would anybody care what Bruce Springsteen has to say? Does he have some foreign policy idea, or does he know something about the economy? Does he have a counterpoint, or is he just going to sing a general song about, you know, born in the USA? I mean, this is an actual, you know, write-up, and it's a long one too, and it's just crazy to me that they're putting so much emphasis on something so silly as somebody sitting down and strumming a tune, and not really a good one, you know, if we're going to be honest.
Well, do you think that? Do you think Bruce Springsteen had illegal immigrants in mind when he sang Born in the USA? Is that the idea right here? I mean, how can this guy possibly be serious when he's writing that?
I don't know. It's just, to me, classic. Like, what did he want rock and roll to do? Tell us how to vote? Is anybody out there thinking, boy, I really don't know which way we should go in this country, you know, but let's find out what rock and roll has to say about it? People that are usually drug addicts, or, you know, live in the most deplorable lifestyles in a lot of cases. And, you know, I guess his point is, well, they're singing songs, but they need to do something. Well, what are they going to do? What are you going to do? I mean, that's what you do. You're paid to sing a song and sell a record. Or if you're an athlete, you're paid to play a sport. You're not paid or expected to come in and tell everybody how to vote or make policy decisions. You're an entertainer. You're an entertainer.
Yeah, we need to find some depth and substance and not just look to these famous people who really, like you said, they do live some pretty miserable lives. Even though they have wealth and they have fame, they're not happy. And it's almost like they could say, look at how I'm living. If you want to live just like me, vote for this candidate. How would anyone really be convinced by that?
Yeah, really, and like you say, just no depth there. And if that's what we're looking to for some sort of solution,
and we have done that already. I mean, Lady Gaga is big time into pop culture, obviously. Jay-Z and Beyonce, I guess they're not technically in the rock and roll genre, but
it's all sort
a lot of
same,
celebrities,
yeah.
A lot of musicians, a lot of people are in those "Get Out the Vote" videos, which are clearly liberally slanted,
mm-hmm.
but. I'm sure a lot of people are speaking out, and that's not really going to make an impact, hopefully.
They did that. I mean, I remember when I was growing up in the 90s, I mean, I remember, you know, they did Rock the Vote. That was MTV's Rock the Vote.
I think they still have that out.
Do they? Yeah. And then, you know, whatever the band of the time was, Nirvana or somebody, you know, get out and vote. Nah. You know, I'm like, Nirvana. What? They kind of set these people up like there's some sort of form of higher intelligence. You know, I'm like, you guys wrote a couple of songs. They weren't great, but they did catch on. You made some cash. You know, I don't know if you shower on a regular basis based upon your appearance. I mean, you know, does anybody want to come home and have their dad look like that? Or I mean, you know, it's just such a weird lifestyle. And but yet they're held up in some circles as if they've got some in-depth information for us. Mm-hmm. And really, and all that does is it does affect the young people. It just undercuts authority. That's the thing. You know, because the man there in the suit and the tie that is well-prepared, that is speaking some truth, if you can find one, that's like, that's the old guy. Hey. I want to hear what the rock and roller has to say. It does have an impact. It has hurt culture in the U.S. in a lot of ways, but also it's given way too much weight as far as what their thought is on anything that has to do with the country.
Well, it just shows you how sad it is that we think the most important people play a sport or sing a song, and it's not about the small business owner or the person who works really hard in the mines all day. It's not about people who raise strong families. It's not about great leaders and, you know, people in charge of big companies that give thousands of jobs. We just care about people who are on TV, basically.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Like, how, as a young person or as, you know, somebody that's raising children, like how do you steer them to be a great leader if they don't know what a great leader looks like?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your examples are whoever the latest rock and roll singer is, well, what kind of a leadership is that? You know, what about looking to a proper example? And so, and if people are actually looking to some sort of celebrity to give them you know, some sort of deeper understanding on something in the political realm or whatever, that just doesn't say much for the overall intelligence of the vote, does it? You know, that's not a very educated decision they're making.
Right. And if a celebrity wants to get out there and speak out, don't just say vote for this person. Really think about your ideas and your stances logically and present them instead of just trying to mind control people.
And that leads us directly into our, of course, this happened. This is the most outrageous celebrity election rants so far. In October, Rosie O'Donnell, she's not a happy person in general, I don't think. She went wild on social media, they say, calling Trump everything from a demented human being to a stupid rich. Fill in the blanks. She also said vulgar things about Trump and Vladimir Putin and called... you don't want to mess with Vladimir Putin. I don't think that's a good idea. And called the GOP nominee a sexual predator and abuser. Trump and Rosie have publicly feuded for years, so her reaction to his candidacy comes as no surprise. This next one's one of my favorites. Cher recently took things to another level when she said she would have to, quote, leave the planet if Trump gets elected.
Please do.
I thought she left the planet years ago.
She's already faded into irrelevancy.
She's gone. Where is she going? Mars?
Float in a spaceship.
Go to the moon? Yeah, so we'll see if she actually does that. Late night host Samantha Bee, who she's a pretty vulgar lady from what I know, went as far as to compare Trump to the likes of Bill Cosby and Roman Polanski during a TV rant.
Did she also compare him to Bill Clinton?
Yeah, right. Good point. Will Smith said the election was bringing him to tears. For a man to be able to publicly refer to a woman as a fat pig, he said, that makes me teary. That makes me teary.
Ugh, that guy, what, that guy know, has an open marriage. Yeah. How does he respect women?
It, you know, it's like fair enough. I mean, the stuff that they're calling different people out on, you know, it is kind of out there. They have been involved, but it's so one-sided. You know, as if the one side is so bad and the other side's great.
Hillary Clinton is on tape laughing about how she got a rapist off the hook, a child rapist.
Yeah, it's terrible. Terrible, terrible, both sides. Robert De Niro appeared in a viral video in which he said he wanted to punch Donald Trump in the face. Well, there you go. More people said other things. J.K. Rowling took to Twitter during one of the debates to call Trump a giant orange Twitter egg. Not sure exactly what that means, other than he's, he does have sort of a tan.
Is that a woman? Is that the writer of Harry Potter?
Harry Potter, yeah, I believe so.
Maybe afraid that he'll abolish Harry Potter?
Yeah. Scott Baio? Like, I didn't even know some of these people were still around. Had a harsh warning for Clinton voters in an impassioned Facebook video he shared in October. Impassioned, rather, sorry. He warned Clinton voters that should she be elected, you own the demise of the United States of America. Well... It's been in demise for a long, long time just because of a lot of bad leadership. And as is pointed out in a lot of great write-ups at thetrumpet.com, you have to look back at the population, the people. You know, it's not just that there's a couple of bad leaders in there. There's a lot more to it than that, which people aren't excited to hear about, of course, but that is the case. And then, of course, there's the one we talked about a while ago where the Baldwin brothers were feuding. So they've really jumped on board this year, these different celebrities. And I think, just from memory, this seems to be the most vicious that anyone's been, both sides. Mm-hmm. And just really brutal in the way they've talked to each other and talked about each other. And it's been quite a debacle. So the question is, of course, is it going to be over tonight? We'll find out. We hope so. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the celebrities jumped in and had some things to say. Well, I don't know what they're going to do if it doesn't go their way, you know, whatever they're hoping. Because some of these people are just so angry about everything. Mm-hmm. I don't go around on Twitter too much. I don't check it out.
I don't either.
And I'm glad I don't, because I think I just couldn't handle the negativity.
Yeah, it's like half threats, half trolling. I guess if there's more than two halves, it's also another half just ridiculing people openly.
You know, I have heard examples of some great leaders in history that if they were upset about something, they sat down and they wrote a letter, and then they would like put it in their desk
and never send it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, a week later, see if they still felt that way. And usually they didn't. But Twitter, no. As soon as you feel something, no matter what you feel, it's immediately out there, and it's just burned so many people.
There was a funny Donald Trump spoof where he said, you know, Hillary, you have all these troubles with your emails. I write all of my nasty things in a completely private forum where no one can see it. It's called Twitter.
Right.
And then the moderator of the debate says, you realize that everyone can see your tweets. He's right. Like, well, oh, how am I still in this thing?
That's right. That has gotten a lot of people into trouble. So it goes. The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG today. Make sure you listen for those. A few good programs from the past, archived programs. And also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, from Edstone, England, talking about the election somewhat and the fact that, you know, the Bible says a lot about how people get in power and that God does move it a certain way or allow it to go a certain way. And he points out there in the book of Daniel, especially, where it's brought out that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Not that it's God's world, but he does have final say on those things. So you don't hear a lot about God in the election. I don't know that was brought up ever. If it was, I didn't hear it.
Well, God's going to win the election. You could say that.
Yeah. It's going to go one way or the other there. So, but the really good program, and it is good to remember that that basic truth, that there is a higher power involved in the way things go in a lot of cases. Grant, you've got an interesting write-up for us here from LifeZet. This is about Obamacare, and we talked about this the other day a little bit, how some of the fees are rising so much. It's really starting to hit people, and people are getting nervous and angry, and it's not what they thought it was going to be in a lot of cases. This write-up is 8 Ways Obama Bends the Truth About Obamacare. So I suppose that maybe the list could be longer. I don't know. But here's 8. What do you have for us?
Well, we have frequently dismantled the concept of the Affordable Care Act on this show. But here are 8 points compiled for us in one place. Mr. Obama first said, because of the law, you now have free preventative care. Insurance companies have to offer that in whatever policy they sell. Because of the law, you now have free checkups for women. Because of the law, you get free mammograms. It says in bold false. These are mandated benefits paid for through higher premiums, whether you want them or not. In addition, Health Affairs reports that 80% of preventative services add more to medical costs than they save. As medical costs rise, premiums rise. So that might be over the head of most people. I had to read that a few times to even kind of grasp it. But basically, it's not, and it really does get back to this. It's pretty simple. It's not as affordable as it sounds. And even when there are free things provided, it ends up costing people more so that those other things can be supposedly free within the plan.
Right. So if I understand it correctly, it's like you're being forced to pay for something that you may not want. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay for it one way or the other. And then, oh, it's free. Well, you already paid for it, whether you wanted to or not. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is with a lot of, I think, these quote-unquote benefits. It's like, well, you get the privilege of paying for things you don't want or need.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you pay it, sometimes it's free, sometimes it's not. But it's not free. You paid for it, where a lot of people just wouldn't do those things. And I guess they would spin it and say, well, yeah, but it's going to help you, you know, prevent things. Well, that's debatable. Mm-hmm. I've heard that argument go a couple of ways. So pretty
exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the second thing he said was, the majority of Americans do not, let me repeat, do not get health care through the Affordable Care Act. It says down here in bold, misleading. Every American has been impacted by the Affordable Care Act, whether they realize it or not. Although a majority of Americans have not gone on the exchange to purchase Obamacare, the law impacts all policies and premiums. And a lot of us know that even if you don't get your health care through the Affordable Care Act, you're still paying the penalty that comes from the Affordable Care Act. So it really does impact every person in the country.
Yeah, they call it a penalty, but it's a forced tax.
Yes.
And if you don't sign up and pay for something that is considered acceptable to the Obamacare policy, you will pay a fine. It's 2.5% of your income, mm-hmm. or I think 600 and something bucks per person in your house, whichever is higher. Which I'm like, come on, it's supposed to be whichever is lower.
Right.
But they get you every single way. So it is a lot of semantics, but they got you one way or the other.
Yeah, that's right. And it has come out a lot more recently that it looks more and more like the Affordable Care Act was designed to fall apart. And that way the government can get charge of these health insurance companies that really they can be blamed for the failure now because they've been put under these restrictive laws. And so the government can say, well, you're clearly not capable of providing health care. The government's going to take this over. And that is really on the fast track to socialism.
Absolutely. They made something so terrible that everyone's going to say, well, let the government take over. At least we don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be better than this disaster. Yeah, it is sort of hit them with something really extreme and then make it seem like you're pulling it back, but you're pulling it back to where you wanted to go in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, deceptive.
And, yes, and then by the way, these points were all given in a 49-minute speech in front of a bunch of millennials recently, mm-hmm. Which is really the main target for the Affordable Care Act because they do depend on millennials to sign up and start paying into it so that there's money to kind of prop it up. And so these young people were actually in agreement with him, it seemed like. Point three, he said that for most Americans, the Affordable Care Act has not affected your coverage except to make it stronger. It says down here in bold, the Affordable Care Act has affected every kind of coverage from Medicare, like a $500 billion cut and lower payments to doctors, to employer plans like employer mandate and benefits mandate, to the rising cost and limited availability of individual plans. For example, the law prohibits catastrophic coverage past the age of 29, which is somewhat baffling because it seems like plenty of people could be involved in really a crisis even when they're past 29 years old.
Yeah, they want you to pay into the system when you don't need it. And then, maybe you'll get something later. But they do, like you say, need those millennials. And I've seen that firsthand where talking about losing some parts of your plan, I know somebody that's older that has Medicaid, and they got a thing in the mail saying, yeah, we're cutting this. So, yeah, you'll have to find something else, you know, because for whatever reason, they're just starting to cut things, and they just put you in a position where you have no choice. You've got to kind of do what they want to do. I don't know, pay the consequences. I don't know what the consequences would be for an older person that's not working. I guess you just don't have anything at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the point about the millennials, you know, being needed, from what I've read, they have not signed up in a lot of cases. They'd rather spend their money on beer and pizza than somebody's, healthcare bills, which, you know, you can understand.
Entirely understandable, really. Yeah, the millennials, in large part, have not really been fooled by this big scam, it seems like. Point four, Mr. Obama says, now some people may say, well, I've seen my copays go up or my networks have changed. But these are decisions that are made by your employers. It's not because of Obamacare. It says in the article, false. Employers are impacted by the employer mandate. Taxes on pharmaceutical corporations, insurers, and medical devices, essential health benefit mandates, higher premiums due to the ban on charging sick people more than healthy, the cost of insurer losses from Obamacare, and the pending 40% Cadillac tax. So we just mentioned that a big part of this is it could be set up to fail to blame the insurance companies. That's exactly what he just did here. Basically, the law is forcing the companies to go in certain ways. For example, it forces people to employers to cut people's hours from maybe 40 hours a week down to 20, because then if they're only part-time employed, they don't have to pay for the person's health care.
Right. And they're forced to offer them a certain health care package or pay a fine. You know, and they say, well, yeah, it's your choice. You don't have to. Well, yeah, you do, because you're paying into it one way or the other. You can call it a fine. You can call whatever you want to. It's just a tax that they put there, and everybody's paying.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you fall below a certain level or you're just illegal. because there's no way to get them to pay. I mean, how would you know where they even are? So it is really hurting the middle class. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of illegals, a lot of the time they seem to be able to get these government benefits, which is, I really just can't understand how we can pinpoint exactly where these people are, because how else would we get the benefits to them? And yet they're still here. They're the ones who don't have to pay their fair share, as is always Hillary Clinton's tagline, pay your fair share. She only says that to the rich, though. What about the people who shouldn't even be in this country in the first place?
Well, yeah, there was a story today even about how, I forget how many millions it was, of illegals that filed tax returns and got refunds. And they didn't pay in because they're not even citizens.
Unbelievable.
But they got a tax return.
Yeah.
which I'm assuming was not penalized with the, you know, Obamacare penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do get a tax return and you did not have coverage, then they're going to take it out of your return. It is baffling.
It is. Yeah, definitely. Point number five, Mr. Obama said in that speech recently, the Affordable Care Act has done what it was designed to do. It gave us affordable health care. Now, I would agree with the first half that it has done what it was designed to do. I just don't think that it was designed to give us affordable health care.
No.
It was designed to fail.
Yeah.
And that is what is happening. It false, the article says. Even Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton, a proponent of Obamacare, so this is a prime quote here, said, the reality is the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable to increasing numbers of people. So even supporters are saying that it's not doing anything close to what he promised.
They should have called the Affordable Care Act just kidding. It's in really small print. You can't see
the Affordable Care Act just kidding.
Just kidding.
That would be accurate in this case. Yeah. Point six, Mr. Obama said, if your premium is going up, it's not because of Obamacare. It's not because of any policy of the Affordable Care Act that the rates are going up. It says here, false. The 2,700 pages of the law, which no one read, more than 20,000 pages of regulations, mandates, taxes, and fees, and 3 years of failed risk-based subsidies for insurers have everything to do with rising rates. There are just too many stipulations in the law. People don't even know what the law says, and there's really no way to avoid the rising rates when you can't even figure out what the law says.
Nancy Pelosi is still reading it. She's still late at night. She's still up trying to read it.
To tell us what's in it.
What's in it. I'll tell you what's in it once I finish this.
It's so long.
By candlelight.
Point number seven, he said, so because of this law, because of Obamacare, another 20 million Americans now know the financial security of health insurance. Again, the article says false. Coverage with unaffordable premiums and deductibles does not represent financial security. Furthermore, coverage does not equal care. Due to narrow networks and managed care controls, many patients face delays and denials. Deductibles have grown six times faster than wages since 2010, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. So it's not affordable. You can't get coverage quickly. The prices are skyrocketing faster than people are getting wage increases, so they can't keep up with the deductible cost that you have to pay before you get the rest of your coverage.
It's unbelievable. It must have been designed to fail, or it was just the work of idiots.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
And it also could have been more idealistic, where he just had another legacy goal in mind. I mean, that's the whole point of the Iran deal. You can't put any logic into it, but you can say that looking down the line, people will be able to say that his supporters at least will be able to say that he made peace with a hostile power. And that's maybe the idea of this health care act, is that he gave health care to millions of people who didn't have it.
The only theme that runs through any of it is destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Let's destroy the middle class. Let's destroy our foreign policy. Let's destroy, destroy, destroy. What's the last point they have?
Point number eight, Mr. Obama said, the net result is that never in American history has the uninsured rate been lower than it is today. Never. It
says, just kidding.
The article has in bold here, define insured. A lower percentage of Americans have private insurance today than in 2007, the Weekly Standard reports. In fact, if the percentage hadn't decreased, 3.8 million more people would be privately insured today. Instead, a majority of the 20 million enrollees are enrolled in Medicaid. Medicaid is not private insurance. It's a government program paid for by taxpayers. So, no, it's certainly not the case that more people are insured than ever before. A lot of people are deciding to go uninsured just to avoid this disaster of a plan.
Yeah, it is. It's just unbelievable. So that's a big thing that I think that'll affect the way a lot of people vote.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because, trying to figure out what's going to happen with that. And, so it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But it is definitely hurting the middle class in a big, big way. But yet, it's just the old song and dance. Nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. But clearly it's starting to hit people where you get those bills and you're like, I can't pay this. I mean, you might as well make it $1 trillion. Everybody has to pay $1 trillion a day for healthcare. Well, they don't have it, so.
Well, you had the example of the man yesterday who, what was it, had to pay $1,300 a month for his plan. How much money do you need to be able to make before you can actually afford that? I would think you'd probably need to be making around $100,000 a year to be able to sustain that big of a health insurance price.
Well, and after a while, what's your motivation to work?
Yeah.
I'm going to work just so I can pay for some ridiculous health care that doesn't even do anything for me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Most people don't make anywhere near $100,000, for sure.
No. Make the 1% pay for it all. Why don't they have to pay us?
It's amazing because that is often what they say. And yet, even if you took 100% of the money from all of the 1%, you couldn't pay for free college like they propose. You couldn't pay for nationwide health care. You wouldn't get close. What you'd be doing is bankrupting the people that you hate so much. And that's about it. It doesn't actually help anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's happening. Some of the crazy things going on in this world today on this election day. And we'll be with you live this evening during the election to talk about what's going on and to give you updates and see if we can figure out who's going to win this thing. We don't know, but we appreciate you being with us, and have a great rest of your day as much as you can. Everybody's stressed out. But we appreciate you being with us here at KPCG and Trumper Radio Live. 101.3 KPCG FM here in Edmond, Oklahoma City online. We're at kpcg.fm, and we'll talk to you later.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.